Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. One of the people that North Carolina politicians and journalists turn to when they're trying to keep up with the ebbs and flows of the state's political battles is veteran campaign strategist and political analyst Thomas Mills. Mills, who's run a number of high-profile campaigns for Democratic candidates down through the years, and who now produces lots of free and insightful analysis at the website politicsnc.com, joined me earlier this week to share his thoughts on the outcomes of the 2020 election, how things are shaping up for the 2022 U.S. Senate race, and whether it's really true, as many analysts have long predicted, that North Carolina will follow the leads of Virginia and Georgia and become a reliably blue state. Welcome to News and Views. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Rob.
So extraordinary times that we're in the midst of, and you as someone who's been in the midst of political battles and followed the politics of North Carolina so closely over the years, I'm sure you have a lot of impressions to share with us. One first question, though, is what the heck happened in the 2020 election? Is there a way to sort of sum up why Democrats, who seem to be poised perhaps to do very well, ended up not doing very well in North Carolina, with the exception of Governor Roy Cooper?
The main thing that happened was the Republicans came. Our side felt like we were motivated and that we were coming out to vote. What we didn't realize is that they were just as motivated, and they came out in even bigger numbers.
Yeah.
And I've been talking about this for a long time, but until we close the gap in turnout, Democrats are going to have a hard time in North Carolina. You know, 2018, they did well. I think Republicans had a 3% advantage in turnout, and we picked up seats in the General Assembly. We didn't have anything at the top of the ticket, except the judges, and we pick those up. So we need to be somewhere either at the same level of turnout as Republicans or within 3 points at the least. And Republicans showed up at about 82%, which is an almost stunning number in 2020. And Democrats, they broke all their recent records anyhow, and showed up at about 75%. But that 7-point gap is enough to make a difference. Yeah. And we see that same 6 to 7 point gap historically over the last 20 years, with the exception of 2008 and 2018.
And so the notion perhaps that, oh, it was Donald Trump being here constantly in the last couple of weeks, and maybe the pandemic tending to sort of suppress last minute excitement for Democrats, you would argue there's more to it than that. These are trends that really have been carrying on for years and years.
I'm not taking away from Trump being in the state. That turnout of 82%, that's really unprecedented. If you go back and look, it's mainly older voters, but that's who the Republicans have. And it's hard to measure how much Trump's focus on North Carolina brought that number up. But the gap between Democratic turnout and Republican turnout is a long-term thing.
A lot of people had for a long time prognosticated that North Carolina was trending more in a Democratic, more progressive direction. It was becoming a more diverse state, a lot of in-migration, not unlike Virginia, perhaps. And now we see the transition apparently starting to happen in Georgia. Is that North Carolina's future, or does that remain uncertain?
You know, I think it is. I mean, I think North Carolina is continuing to trend blue. We're facing a lot of tough gerrymandering, and will continue for another decade. So it becomes hard to win in districts. Congressional districts, legislative districts are probably still going to lean Republican. But I believe had Cal Cunningham not had that scandal, he would probably be the senator from North Carolina along with Cooper. Or there's a good chance of that anyhow. Mm-hmm. And it's true. The state is becoming more purple anyhow. The new voters are voting Democratic. If you go look at what the Democratic coalition is, it's these voters under 40 are voting increasingly Democratic. And the problem that Democrats have is they show up, they turn out at much lower levels than the folks over 40. But as those people get older, they're going to start voting more too. And I think they're going to vote Democrat. It's just not going to happen as fast as everybody thought. And there's a few differences between North Carolina and Georgia. Georgia is about 32% African-American. North Carolina is about 22% African-American. Georgia is now, I think it's over 60% urban-suburban. North Carolina is still like less than 50% urban-suburban. And the divide is as much rural-urban almost as it is Democrat-Republican. And look, we're becoming a more urban-suburban state, but it's taken a lot longer.
I wonder about the issue of the Republicans at the national level. We keep hearing how there's a divide now, a crisis in the Republican Party with those loyal to Trump and those perhaps who want to move on from Trump. Somehow it seems that the Republicans in North Carolina have pretty successfully avoided this divide, at least in any kind of real visible way.
Right. I actually thought about writing about that a little bit. North Carolina, they're following the trend of North Carolina Democrats in the 80s. Even into the 90s, where the Democratic Party really didn't track in North Carolina with the National Democratic Party. In 1984, famously, Walter Mondale came to North Carolina and nobody was there to greet him. We had a, we had a U.S. Senate race, we had a governor's race, and nobody showed up. And, you know, Republicans, I think, are kind of doing the same thing. They're not running from Trump as much as maybe Democrats ran from Mondale, but you don't see the leadership of the, or the legislative leadership anyhow, wrapping themselves around Donald Trump. You see it a little bit more at the congressional level and at the state party level, but those people are really trying to motivate the base. I think the legislative leaders are trying to walk a fine line and not alienating kind of the moderate voters who seem to be abandoning Trump around this impeachment stuff.
One development that's a little frightening is, of course, that the 2022 campaign is effectively already well underway, and North Carolina will have an, it appears anyway, we believe Senator Richard Burr is calling it a career, will have an open Senate seat here in North Carolina. People are already starting to line up for that. I wonder if you have any initial thoughts about perhaps what both parties are doing with respect to Burr's Senate seat in 2022.
You know, I think we got to look at what happened in Georgia in that runoff. Traditionally, runoffs are very low turnout elections, or certainly lower turnout elections than the general election. That was true in Georgia, too. It was certainly not as high a turnout as it was in November. But the drop-off was greater among Republicans than it was among Democrats, particularly African-American voters. And I think they were engaged around Warnock, and that drove the ticket. Mm-hmm. And they, by having an African-American who was running clearly an historic campaign, you were able to galvanize African-American voters to come out in a low turnout election. And I think North Carolina has an opportunity to do the same thing in 2022. Historically, mid-year elections have overall turnout in the mid-40s. Doesn't usually reach 50. I think it reached I think it was 50-something in 2018, but that was the exception, not the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have an African-American, particularly an African-American woman on the ticket, you're going to see a significant turnout from that community. And I don't think that that translates as well if the candidate is more, at least on a, from an outward view, kind of more of the same. And I think I have a bias about U.S. Senate candidates, and I think they need to be people who have solid track records of winning competitive races, and they need to have a background of accomplishments. You know, John Ossoff is an exception, not the rule. Very, very few people make the leap from state legislature to U.S. Senate. We had it with Kay Hagan, but Hagan won in a great year. And a lot of people blasted me saying that, you know, in fact, Kay Hagan led the ticket, and that's true. But the reality of it is we had about a 4 to 5 point jump in African-American voters and a huge jump in younger voters. And Hagan may well have beaten Dole, but I don't think she would have beaten Dole by 6% without Obama on the ticket in 2008. I feel like you've got an opportunity here to have a candidate who can increase turnout among the Democratic base, but it's got to be somebody special. And I have a hard time seeing somebody who has a little more on a resume than a state Senate seat winning the nomination. Maybe not the nomination, but winning the seat. You know, on the Republican side, Mark Walker will be a good candidate if he's the nominee. I think Walker's problem is he gets, if he finds out he gets knocked out by somebody from the Trump side of the party. But Walker has done a remarkably good job of straddling that fence, mm-hmm. of coming across as certainly pragmatic, if not moderate, but pragmatic, thoughtful, intelligent. He speaks well, and he's not going to be a polarizing figure. And he's got that background of being in Congress that plays well with the voters. They want their senators to be experienced. Walker, he got there by beating Phil Berger Jr. in a primary, and nobody saw that coming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the assumption was that Berger was going to take the seat. I think it was a runoff. It ended up, I think they went to a runoff, but still, Berger was the, even in the general election and the runoff, was who everybody expected to see holding that seat, and Walker beat him. He's no slouch as a candidate.
One person you suggested in a recent column who might be a formidable candidate for the Democrats is former Supreme Court Chief Justice Sherry Beasley, who just recently lost by a couple hundred votes in a statewide election to hold on to her seat. There are a couple of state senators, Jeff Jackson, Erica Smith, who've thrown their hat in the ring for the Democrats. But you wrote in your column that you thought that perhaps Beasley, echoing what you just were talking about, might be a person who would bring a degree of gravitas to the race that perhaps a state senator who's never been anything other than in the minority would bring, the minority in the Senate, that is a minority party, might bring to the race.
Right. And, you know, she just got through. Now, I'm not going to compare a state Senate race to a U.S. Senate race, but it was a highly competitive race. She understands what a campaign is about. And neither of those two senators has really ever had a competitive race. You know, I think Jackson likes to say that his last race was competitive, but it wasn't. His district was relatively safe. Beasley just ran a really tough campaign. She tied. 400 votes is a tie when you got 5.4 million votes in there. For all intents and purposes, that race was an even race. And she defied the odds. Every other Democrat running for statewide judicial race lost. Almost every other Democrat running for statewide office lost, with the exception of incumbents. And she almost won that seat. I think she's prepared. I think she brings a profile. Nobody is going to question her readiness to go serve after serving as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of North Carolina.
We're coming to the end of our time with veteran Democratic political analyst Thomas Mills. I guess the final question I'd have for you, Thomas, is about the Biden administration. It seems that the Biden administration has made the decision to learn from the mistakes of the Obama years and simply plow ahead with their agenda, an agenda that seems to be pretty popular in the polls with voters, and just go ahead and try to get it through now and bank on that being a success that will lead to further victories going forward, rather than trying to craft some sort of grand bargain with the Republicans in Washington. Is that what you see as happening?
I think that's what's happening. And I think that they're going to be successful in what they're trying to do right now. You know, Obama came in, his whole premise was, I'm going to bring the country together. I'm going to unite the country around policy and everything. I think what Biden, when Biden's talking about unity, I think there are a few things. It's about reaching out to the other side, and he's done that. He had 10 senators in there talking about their plan, which is clearly a plan that falls short of what needs to be done in this country. Almost every economist agrees that what they're talking about doesn't meet the needs. But he has seen what happens when you try to negotiate people who are not negotiating in good faith. And that's the problem that Republicans have. And they're finally starting to have to pay the piper for McConnell basically saying, I'm going to make everything fail, regardless of whether it's good for the country or not, because I want to make Obama a one-term president. And that's what we're seeing. There's nobody on the Democratic side, I think, maybe a handful of senators, but for the most part, nobody trusts them to negotiate in good faith. They believe that what they're trying to do is make the president fail and not really look out for the interests of Americans. And Biden's not going to fall for that again. It hurt Obama in 2010. Maybe it'll hurt Democrats in 2022 because they say they hadn't negotiated. But I would certainly rather go into 2022 with a whole lot of notches in my belt saying we did this, and we did this, than to go in there and say, well, we never really got anything done because our negotiations failed.
Yeah, it seems that American people are probably more interested in results than the process in Washington. Thomas, thank you so much for being with us. I hope we can do this again sometime. Good luck, and thanks for keeping tabs on North Carolina politics for us.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Rob. You have a good day now.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, it's Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. Please wear your mask, stay safe as best you can. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.